Infendo Radio is on now.
Well, welcome everybody to Infendo Radio. I have Scott and Harrison with me as always. How you doing, guys?
I'm doing great.
Pretty good. Podcast team assemble. That's yeah.
Like the Voltron of Nintendo podcasts.
So we are which is three parts. We're missing a fourth or fifth person to actually make this Voltron podcast complete.
That's true. Well, I mean, ironically enough, we're actually starting off the podcast talking about PlayStation, believe it or not. But I mean, there's big PlayStation news coming on.
We're starting with PlayStation news. are we serious with this?
Well,
we've got to save the best for last.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm sure there's a listener or one of our listeners out there saying, like, did I stumble around the right podcast?
Right. This is PlayStation Radio today, I guess, substituting in our us. Yeah, but yeah,
we're trolling you all.
Yeah, that's right. I think everybody kind of is in the mood to talk about like the new consoles that are being rumored, because I mean that's like direct competition with Nintendo now. So yeah, and PlayStation kind of struck first with on February 20th they're going to be having a show of what's supposedly going to be the PS4. So I mean, what do you guys even think about this? Have you guys seen the teaser video or anything like that?
I've seen it, and I've posted the video on our sister site, Nerdsy. You know, I'm almost thinking they're going to be a little cautious with their announcement on the 20th, maybe to kind of test the waters and before E3 and see, you know, what the feedback is.
Right.
I don't think we're going to hear a whole lot at the announcement. I'm expecting maybe you know, something like the design of the whatever the PS4 or whatever they decided to call it is, probably an official name, probably a quick glimpse at the design of the console, maybe a hint at what sort of games might be coming.
Right.
I don't think they're going to get into any real specs. Maybe a few teaser specs out there to kind of get people excited, but I don't think there's going to be a whole lot there. I think though, if they really really wanted to get people excited, the one thing that they can kind of sneak in there and really really just pump up everybody is like a Final Fantasy Versus 13 or whatever they decide to call it in the future. I've heard that it might even drop the 13 name and just be Final Fantasy Versus. But
right,
if they show a little glimpse of that, I think that, you know, just a little bit will be enough to hold everybody over for E3.
Right. Well, I mean, do you think that it's going to take the steam out of the Wii U, Harrison? I mean, are you excited about this console at all? I mean, what's your take on it?
As far as this taking the steam out of the Wii U right now, I mean, we've all been discussing about this, how this is not going to – I mean, these next – from the consoles launch from November up till, you know, fall, these next, you know, few months are going to be crucial for Nintendo. I mean – given how the sales reports right now are, how this console's been doing, I mean, you could call it underwhelming, but I mean, poor or anything like that. But I mean, it's one thing, you know, it's through that, this is something we were kind of knowing was coming right now. It's just now we're bracing for it. Do I, as far as my interest in this, again, this next console generation, I mean, I already said to myself, okay, I'm going to have my Nintendo console, but also I'm going to be, for the first time in a while, first time in quite some time, decide, you know, have a good sit down and figure out, okay, am I going to get Sony or Microsoft's, you know, next console, if they're going to, whatever they release.
Right.
But as far as was taking it out, it all depends on the games and how, what this thing's going to look like. I mean, obviously Sony is, you know, for the last couple of years, they've learned their mistakes from like the PlayStation 3 launch. And given right now, they probably are going to be able to, you know, fix those mistakes. I mean, they'll easily fix those mistakes. It just, going through, I mean, visiting through forums, it seems like even a bunch of quite a few Nintendo fans are getting a little upset or worried about, you know, being early adopters, you know, where this console is going to go and where exactly. I mean, again, it comes down to games.
Right.
I agree. Now, I've heard a lot of feedback about the next-gen consoles, including the Wii U. I mean, a lot of people that have not gotten the Wii U yet, a lot of them waited, from what I've heard on the personal side, to see what's going to happen with it. And the last Wii U Direct that introduced the Wind Waker remake, that that kind of set a lot of people in motion to purchase the Wii U, just that game alone. So I think that, you know, same thing for PlayStation, same thing for the next Microsoft console. There has to be that one key game that, that's really going to draw people's attention. And of course, the announcement that there will be a new Zelda in the future, although it may not be now, there will be one. But I've also heard a lot of feedback from people regarding to all the next gen consoles, basically just saying that this next generation, there's just really nothing there that's really going to excite them from what they have currently. A lot of the specs and rumors and so on that have been leaked, supposedly, a lot of people just aren't excited. Like, there is the new PS Move controllers that you know, you can kind of use up to four controllers or whatnot at once to mimic you know, movement and so on.
Right.
You know, the feedback I've heard from that is that, well, Kinect does that without these weird looking attachments on you. But then on the other same side, I've heard people talk about like the next generation Xbox, which is supposed to have enhanced Kinect capabilities, saying that that, you know, get away from the Kinect altogether and let's just get us back into the core video game. So it seems like there's just not a lot of excitement overall, but I mean, that could all change once these are announced. And of course, the diehard fanboys, you know, with the Nintendo, you know, consoles like us, we all got it. I mean, regardless of what it was, we were going to get it. You're going to have the same thing for the other two consoles also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm surprised that Sony's making this move first when, you know, Sony had, you know, went on the record saying that they were going to allow, you know, Microsoft to announce their console first, but
yeah,
I think that was the old bait and switch by Sony.
I think so too. Well, and I don't think it's a bad move. I think it's actually a smart move if they give us some sneak peeks. Yeah. You know, again, they can't go too much detail with this February 20th announcement. You know, half an hour and just do little quips here and there. I think that's going to give them enough idea from the feedback they receive to find out what they need to do for E3 to really hype this up. I mean, if everybody's really excited, there's no complaints, you know, keep going whatever route they're going. Obviously, that's not going to be how it is. There's going to be complaints and whatnot. But there's also going to be a lot of praise either way. So it really, I think, because of the lackluster, you know, performance at E3 last year, I think that this is definitely something they need to do to prepare themselves and really, you know, focus.
It seems like it's going to be a make or break E3 for them. I mean, definitely. if they stumble on this, then the warning signs are going to be all going out. But I mean, if they show that, like, a great showing of games, be it, you know, established franchises or new collaborations with their in-house development team, or they just blow us out, whatever, with these surprise third-party exclusive announcements, I mean, it's all going to rely on that. I mean, they can't just, you know, well, like we talked last time, was Wired mentioned something about, you know, calling these announcements, like the last Nintendo Direct first-party announcements, as vaporware, as, you know, games that are essentially, you know, announced and, you know, announced, they're out there, but they're not coming out for quite some time. But, right. I mean, but it's really, really hard to actually kind of get this grip on it, because this is, like I said, this could probably, you know, make or break the company. Well, not to say this company is going to die out. I mean, I still feel like, you know, Nintendo has quite a bit of funds in their own little war chest that they built up for the last 20 or 30 years. Oh, it's yeah. Just, if they really want to take themselves seriously in this generation, they have to show out, like, hey, we understand there's problems with this console right now, but here's the games coming out right now. I mean, thank you for waiting. You know, it's a matter of us trying to be patient.
You know, right. I almost feel like this is exactly the same way I felt about the 3DS right about this time in its life cycle too. Like right before the firmware update for eShop and then a couple of games started coming out. I think the first big one that meant anything to the console was probably the Ocarina of Time remake, the 3D one. So it's kind of funny that Wind Waker HD is going to be the saving grace for the Wii U this year when it comes out this Christmas or whenever it is coming out. But I mean, I think that Nintendo is going to be okay. I don't know that it's ever going to regain the hardcore crowd, if you want to call it that, that kind of has moved on to Sony and Microsoft. But I think it's still good. People are still going to buy the console for the Nintendo games just like they always have.
Yeah,
I think,
and yeah, I mean, that seems to be the talking point, you know, comparing like the 3DS launch to this right now. It, I mean, it did have a similar story. It's just a matter of, like, is this are they really going to go with like a price drop? I mean, again, that depends on what PlayStation 4 and Microsoft's next console are going to be priced at, which I really don't believe the rumor. I mean, a couple of these rumors have been flying around saying this thing could be priced around $400 or whatever, and I don't know. It seems a bit of a stretch on there. I could easily see this thing probably around like $450 to $500 at max. But then again, these things could be cut out into different versions, be it like you know, colors or well, not price based on color, but you know, storage capacity and
right.
bundles, yeah. yada yada yada. But one thing I wanted to talk about just shortly was this week we found out that Ubisoft was going to be porting Rayman Legends to the 360 and the PlayStation 3, and thus, you know, the Wii, in a matter of the same week, the Wii U lost not one but two exclusives. Well, the other being Ninja Gaiden 3 Razor's Edge, but wouldn't really. Some could say, well, it's not really exclusive. That game was actually on the other one, the other consoles, but it was a more dumbed down version of that game, but
right.
one that did not, the one that was like critically panned. Now, this I had to ask. Do exclusives matter, you know, as much as they did about a console generation or two console generations before? As in, like, not, yeah, do they really matter?
I think they do. I mean, not to interrupt, but I think that they do to an extent. I mean, and I guess this is me looking back at, you know, in my early gaming days, you know, with the Genesis versus the Super Nintendo or Nintendo. You know, with exclusives, that really put focus on a specific game. I mean, for example, like back then, the Final Fantasy series was exclusive to Nintendo. Obviously, they've strayed from that, and you know, I'm not to say that that's a bad thing, but you know, at that point, the exclusives helped sell the unit. I mean, people bought those systems because of the games. Now, obviously, we've got different consoles out now. They all have basically the same capabilities. I mean, you can have the same game on multiple consoles with very little difference between them. Although, for example, if we're going to stick with Final Fantasy, on Final Fantasy 13, with the PS3, you had one disc. With the Xbox, you had, gosh, a whole library of discs.
Yeah, I have both Final Fantasy 13 and 13-2 on my Xbox 360. It's like 8 discs. It's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. When I first opened it,
I think it might be 6. I might be exaggerating a little bit, but it's a lot of discs.
Yeah, I actually have it for both my PS3 and my Xbox, and truthfully, I've never even played the Xbox One, because if I can play it on one disc, it's one disc. I don't have to worry about 6 discs possibly getting scratched. You know, in the early days when they started splitting them between multiple discs, I'd lose a disc, and then, you know, I'd have to either buy the brand new game or just wait until I found it. It was always a mess, and I think that, you know, that's something that's huge. But either way, you know, I think exclusive games do matter. However, I don't think every game needs to be exclusive. I think that if there's a specific franchise, like a popular franchise, let's say Rayman, just since that's what we're talking about here, you know, Ubisoft, for a game like that with a character that's kind of a niche character like that, pick a console, stick with it, and tailor to that fan base. But I think it's, of course, obviously, it's going to be a money thing for Ubisoft. You know, they're looking at Nintendo, right, and they're thinking, well, this is kind of scary. What's going to happen in the future? We've got these other two consoles that are set in their base. Let's do that.
With similar outputs, I mean, similar features.
Exactly.
And then my feeling about exclusives is, it's, of course, you're not going to ever see a Mario or a Zelda on a Sony or a Microsoft console. That's never going to happen. So we can rule that out. But I mean, as for like third parties, like if Capcom wants to make a Resident Evil game, I don't see why it's a problem if they port it to every console known to man to make them as much money as they can, because, you know, they're a business. They want to make money. But what kind of, what, going back to the Ubisoft thing with Rayman, it doesn't bother me quite as much as I've seen it bother everybody else, because, again, I mean, yeah, we're going to get some exclusive gamepad features that some of the other consoles aren't going to have, so that's still great. But I don't see why it's a problem for them to make as much money on that title as they can.
Well, yeah, and I think I wouldn't have been mad if this would have went multi-platform after the initial Wii U release, but
right,
the fact that the Wii U version was delayed as well, and even several members from the Ubisoft Montpellier like development team have said that this game is practically done, and I just don't understand the idea of like delaying that game as well. I mean, one can answer saying, oh, just, you know, they want the simultaneous release so they can, you know, increase profits, you know. And like Scott, well, like Scott said, Rayman's a, you know, not a bad character. I love the character, but he is a niche character in this, you know, in the world of platforming. But it's well, Origins didn't really sell. I mean, it was a critical darling, but it was technically a critical flop.
Right.
And I kind of agree with the notion of, like, you know, just release this on one console exclusively, and, you know, maybe you will be able to cut your losses. But I think it really came down to whatever the first game. I mean, it was marketing. It was a game that flew under the radar for, like, a lot of people. But and I really hope that they kind of correct the mistakes of this one, that they, you know, it has a better, like, a better financial forecast. It's just, I'm really just really mad at the fact that this, we have to wait till September for this.
Right. Yeah. And it, right. You know, it, like, all comes down to that these companies want to make as much money. And if that's what they, they're whoever they are that plan these things, say that they can make more money if they release it all simultaneously, then so be it. It's kind of sucks for the consumer on our end, but, you know, I guess that's just the business.
Yeah. And I agree with that. I mean, I wasn't so upset at first about the whole, you know, delay of launch on the game. You know, as long as the game was going to come out, that's fine with me. I think what made me more upset about the whole thing is, as one of the developers put, I think that you had posted, Harrison, his quote was that, you know, for about 6 months of time or so, it took him away from his family and basically his life became this game. So they were on such a strict timeline to get this done. They put all their energy into the game, and then here at the last minute they're told, all your work was basically for nothing, we're going to delay it, you could have, you know, took your time on it. You know, that was kind of more of an upsetting part to me, that it's not so much that they delayed it, but it's that they don't really, maybe I'm stepping out of line here, but that they just don't care enough about their employees to, you know, maybe give them the time that they need, that they rush, and then just kind of let it go as it was. Obviously, that particular employee was very upset about the situation. So, you know, whether or not, you know, that's how it is for everybody or not, it at least affected somebody like that.
Mm-hmm. It did. And, you know, it's affecting even, you know, Wii U, like, early adopters right now for the Wii U. And I've heard testimonies from even early adopters saying, you know, how upset they are about this delay. But, I mean, obviously you have Lego City Undercover next month and Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate. But then again, Monster Hunter 3 caters to kind of a different, like, a bit of an audience. I mean, it's obviously not as big here in the States as it is in Japan. But it's just, for a console that needs games badly early in the stage, it's really a bit of an arrogant move at times to kind of do that. But I'm past it, whatever, but it's just, this is me, whatever, like, just wanting to get a good, you know, everything out of this console that I've bought right now. I mean, it's just basically me being impatient.
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, I think there is a kind of a lack of games at this moment. You're right there. And it's kind of frustrating to see one of the better ones that was supposed to be coming out to be not only delayed, but I could pick it up on my Xbox 360 if I wanted to. So it's, mm-hmm. it's kind of a tough spot.
I just think one thing that the all the big three and maybe any of the future consoles that might come out need to take away from this is that if a developer tells you that, you know, this game is going to be exclusive to their console, I think they need to get a contract in place to get that done. And that would have prevented this altogether. Now, obviously, you know, Ubisoft is big, Nintendo's big. Maybe it was just, you know, a verbal agreement that this is going to be done or off by this time. Maybe there was no agreement at all. Maybe it was just, you know,
yeah, maybe it was
whatever.
Just us assuming that it was going to be an
exactly.
exclusive game. Yeah.
Exactly. But, you know, either way, we're still getting the game. So in the long run, yeah, we have to wait a little bit longer, but maybe hopefully the changes they make just make the game that much better.
Right, yeah. Well, I mean, speaking of, like, the companies wanting to be getting money, I mean, Microsoft is rumored to have a internet connection requirement for its next console. So, I mean, moving from Sony to Microsoft, I mean, is this something that you think will affect games in the future? I mean, borrowing games has always been a staple of, like, older consoles. I remember trading NES cartridges in the playground when I was a kid, you know?
This is... I know this particular rumor has upset even GameStop to be the least. I had read the statement from them, but they were not too pleased with this news.
Oh, well,
and
I mean, their stocks dropped like 6% the day that that it was this was announced.
That much? Jeez.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was crazy.
Wow.
It's, I mean, I generally have a kind of a love-hate relationship with GameStop, whatever, just kind of based on one, unemployees, and two, just the overall, like, you know, atmosphere there. I just never was really, I mean, obviously I go there most of the time for my used games, but it's never was really a bit of a welcoming environment for me, whatever, at the time. I mean, I remember when I was a little kid, I'd go in there, talk, whatever, about, like, a certain game or a certain console, and this is from someone who, like me as a little kid, you know, read all the major video game magazines, and when I'd mention something like, oh, this certain game's coming out this month, and saying blatantly that this game's delayed, and I say, no, it's not, and there would be times where I'd be kind of getting in a small little argument with these employees when I was, like, around 10 or 12, and
yeah.
That's why I was not loud at the local GameStop for about 2 years, kids. I digress. Is as far as this requiring an internet connection to block used games, it's like, well, what's the tech in that exactly? Would it basically, like, recognize these used games, or recognize basically, I'm guessing you need a certain save file, whatever, to show your ownership? I mean, that's the thing that's kind of – I'm trying to read up a little bit more on.
I don't know. It could, like, your console could have, like, an encryption key that and each disc could have its own encryption key, and then once
I think that is it. They that has been one thing that's been talked about, like, you know, through this report, through this rumor, and obviously you're going to have those game companies out there. They do not like the used game market, because it's around, like, I'm guesstimating here, about they're losing about 10% of the profit that they would make back if this game was sold back to them or sell back. But I just feels got to get a little bit of a witch hunt, though, to go after these used game dealerships or, like, well, stores. And I, as far as this decision, if this is true, I really do feel, and this is, I mean, I enjoy my 360. I enjoy what Microsoft does as far as, like, you know, to what their products they put out. It just, I do feel like this would be a bit of a fatal mistake if they would have done, if they really go through this.
Right. Yeah. Myself as well. I mean, I do feel for the game developers that aren't seeing any profits from these used game sales. But I mean, it's kind of been how it has been since the beginning of video games. And it just seems so anti-consumer to implement something like this in at this stage when video games are $60. I mean, they're pretty cheap nowadays. I mean, compared to like a $90 N64 cartridge, I understand
right.
that, but I mean, it's still not cheap. So it's kind of a tough position to talk about, because you got to feel for the developers as well, you know?
Exactly. Well, what I see possibly happening now, going with the internet connection rumor, you know, Microsoft has said that Xbox Live is an integral part of their system, which I can understand, and especially with the route that the Microsoft is kind of going, where they're combining all of their platforms to kind of work with one another, kind of like Apple does. I can see where they would want the Xbox Live, so that way, you know, the Xbox Live can communicate with the Windows Live phones, as well as the Windows 8, and so on, everything else from there. I think that if they do go that route, most of the diehard fans won't leave, because they're already using the Xbox Live most of the time anyway. You know, especially the younger base. I know that I had debated renewing my Xbox Live membership, because I never use it, and when my daughter goes on there, you know, it's basically just a chat with her friends. It's like a glorified, you know, chat network.
Right.
They'll play Minecraft or Call of Duty, but that's it. But they're mostly talking. And I had debated, but I mean, she literally threw such a huge fit that I was thinking about it. I just gave in, and I put up the $50 to do it.
Right.
So I think overall the fan base is going to respond okay with that. The downside is, though, you know, families with slow to no internet access, I mean, they're just completely alienated. I mean, Microsoft is basically telling them, you know, we don't care about you. You know, we want the people that are, you know, spending more money with these downloads and so on. So I think it will hurt them, but I think that it won't be as big of an impact as maybe we think it will. But with the used games, that's something, you know, I almost see almost an impossibility, because what will happen, I can see, is that if they completely tell people that, you know, used games are just an absolute no-no, we're not going to allow that, I don't think it can work on the past games. I mean, they'd have to have some sort of thing in place to do that. And I don't see how they could, if that's not already, I mean, if there's no way to track. I mean, obviously all games from the 360 backwards, they're all going to be used games. So how do you justify which one really does belong to this person or not? So I don't know how that's going to work. But you know, what I could see them doing is, you know, just like when we buy a new game with Nintendo, we have a code inside the package.
Right.
We log into our Nintendo account and we enter that code, get our points and so on from that. What I could see is something similar happening with a Microsoft game, where there's a code inside the box. You buy the game, you input the code, and that's makes that game become your game. So whenever you're logged into a console with your Xbox Live ID, you can play that game potentially. Now, for used games, the way I can see them getting around that is, let's say I go to GameStop and I purchase, you know, a game. What I would have to do at that point, when I try to play that game, and it asks me to input the code, obviously I don't have one. I could see them giving you the option to buy a new code for it.
Right.
Maybe it's 99 cents for the new code, something very small.
I'll say that could work. That could work. Whatever. Yeah. I mean, you can't overprice this thing, that kind of like thing, so high.
Exactly. Yeah,
I see them charging probably like $5 for a code.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's gonna be like Sony or Microsoft doing that, I see them charging it, that price. But I don't know. That's actually a good idea. That I would go for something like that.
And what they would have to do too is, you know, obviously the developers are gonna want their piece of that. So let's say it's $5. You know, $2.50 goes to Microsoft, $2.50 goes to the developer. Mm-hmm. Everybody's happy, and you know they're making that incremental money off that same game.
Right.
So in a way, they're making more money because they're not spending the time to build to make those extra discs, the extra content, and so on. So it's incremental money, and it works for everybody. And I think if I went to GameStop, and I mean GameStop games will probably have to go down in price, which the downside is, you know, the $10 you get for trading in your brand new game that you bought 3 days ago, you're probably only going to get $5 for it. So, you know, there's going to be that trade off there. But, you know, like Harrison there, you know, with GameStop and the other big, we only have GameStop around here for the big boys, but you know, we've got two of them within literally 1 mile apart. One is in the mall, one's a freestanding store within actually not even a mile. It's realistically maybe half a mile away. And we've got another one on the other side of the next town that's, you know, maybe 10 miles away. And, you know, between the three of those, the stores are so small. You go in there, you stand in line forever.
Right.
It's just, you know, everybody, single file, in and out, that's it. Personally, I'd rather, you know, support the more local guys. You know, you can actually have conversations with them and get some good feedback. And, you know, they're not just trying to sell you the latest and greatest or whatnot. They're actually trying to get you a game you like. And usually have some really good deals. We have one spot that, you know, buy five, get one free and, you know, stuff like that. So, you know, it could hurt those smaller stores, but I don't know. It might actually help out a little bit.
It could. Yeah, it could. It just, like I said, this just seems very like a risky move for them to kind of like put that into. I mean, and it's obviously, you know, with these new consoles going to be graphically power, like more powerful than the predecessor. I mean, obviously it just, it's the internet access, you know, it's the whole thing that, I mean, obviously we're in this, you know, world where everything's connected and it's kind of commonplace that you should be able to have this, whatever. I mean, up to like 5-6 years ago, I could say even, yeah, about 10 years ago, not everybody in the country had broadband internet access. I didn't, especially my area. And this hurts me because, if this is true, this hurts me because I live in an area, I currently live in my family's house during the weekdays, and I have my 360 there all the time. And obviously this could be, you know, for those who will probably write in about this, whatever, it's like, yes, I could fix this with cloud gaming, whatever, you know, saves, but I just don't have I don't have my Live account up anymore right now just because of funds. But it hurts me because my internet access at my house is slow. I use HughesNet because I live in a valley. So that's the reason why I'm doing a podcast up here up in the city, mm-hmm. because when I'm doing it like on that, you know, it's very slow. There's delay in the recording, and it even when I'm trying to get on an online deathmatch, like, you know, get online, it's just super slow. Even when I put my Wii U online, given how the getting between menu to menu is, you know, slower than molasses, it's even slower there.
Right.
It really hinders the experience a lot, and this would hurt me as well. I mean, the obvious answer would be like, I'll get a better internet provider. But again, I live in a it's my area that I live in that I'm not able to actually get that. Sure, I could probably pay for, you know, better connection speed, but again, I'm not the one paying the bill, so right. I would have to do that. But that's my concern on there, because it would hurt me. But hopefully, you know, I'm out of that. You know, I'd be out of there to, you know, this wouldn't affect me that much.
Right, and you know what, and I think that's kind of part of the reason why Nintendo has announced that it was kind of Iwata that was just talking about it, but that they have no plans for cloud gaming, and I think part of it is because just not everybody has reliable internet access. I mean, it's just not available in the United States all over the place. I think the last report I read was that 19 million Americans still have no access to high-speed internet, so I mean, it's not a significant number of the population, but it's enough to, like, to take heat in that, you know.
I'll say cloud storage is a great, you know, a great feature, and I'm a little mixed on this this quote from these statements from Iwata. It's kind of itching back forward to kind of almost like about a generation ago, you know, their stance on online, and I feel like it's going to take another generation for them to kind of, you know, stop being stubborn and actually get with the times, but you know, this is something I would really like them to have, because on the issue of cloud gaming is, you know, look at the storage capacity of the Wii U right now. I mean, the deluxe, okay, with the basic version we have 8 gigs, and of course with the deluxe we have 32, and then it's expandable by, you know, external hard drives or flash drives. And again, when you have a Wii U, you sign up with your Nintendo Network ID, but the thing is, your ID is not tied to the network in this kind of cloud-based storage. It's tied to the console. And, you know, I'll get more of my rant about that when we talk a little bit about things, how to fix the Wii U. But this is something I really would like, you know, to kind of explore a little bit more to it. I mean, it could, you know, in the long run, help their, hopefully not inevitable, like, storage problems that they could have, whatever, if people aren't really expanding this by, you know, with external drives.
I think I'm okay with the no cloud storage for now. I mean, one thing that Iwata had mentioned is that we're not ready for it yet, as far as maybe the technology. For example, some games out there, if you're playing on the cloud, if their servers are overloaded, we've seen this with Microsoft in the past, and also with the Wii U launch with the very, very slow download time of the update and so on.
It reminds me of Diablo's problems, too, at the launch.
Absolutely. And we've seen it with Apple, too, with, I think it was the iOS 4 or 5. I think it was the 4 update, where people just couldn't download it. They were just – their servers were overwhelmed. The downside there is, if a new game launches, and you know, Diablo would be a perfect example – you know, everybody jumps on to play it, and suddenly nobody can play it because it's just not available. There's a lot of work to do. I think that if they were to initiate a cloud-based gaming system, they've got to over-plan for it. I mean, they've got to have so much, I guess, server space out there and bandwidth and whatnot to basically take their estimations, maybe double their estimations of what they think their use will be, just to be prepared. But on the other side, though, with cloud storage, the plus side is, you know, if I have a game that I'm storing on the cloud, you know, the fact that I might be able to, you know, share that from my Wii U to my DS, whether I'm, you know, next to my Wii U or halfway across the country, or, you know, just that, to have that capability there.
Yeah, that would be definitely
that's
neat.
Perfect. Yeah. I think it should be saved games. I mean, if they're going to go a cloud service-based, start with something like save games, maybe some of the eShop downloads, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Start small like that and work your way up. But I think they're okay by not allowing it right away.
Yeah, it's I don't think I've seen a reliable way. I mean, I've tried online before even, but it's just not. It's kind of laggy. It might be my internet connection, but I mean, that, for cloud gaming, I don't think that definitely Nintendo shouldn't be the one pioneering this, because I mean they're just basically now getting their internet stuff going. But I have a feeling that that Sony was going to have something to do with that. I mean, with their acquisition of Gaikai last year. So I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how this goes and who it can work for. I mean, no, I don't think my internet connection is fast enough for something like that. So it'll just be interesting to see.
And speaking of the slow internet connection, I mean, you have broadband, correct?
Yeah, I do. I have cable internet.
And yours isn't fast enough. Mine probably isn't fast enough either. We've got a cable internet also. But I was listening to yesterday morning the Kim Komando show on the radio, she had mentioned that AOL still about $500 million in their revenue is still dial-up sales.
No kidding.
So
wow.
That amazed me. I mean, in my line of work, I'm helping people set up their email and so on for some things that we host and whatnot. I remember the first time that I talked to somebody that had AOL as their home account, and I was just like, are you kidding me? That's even still around? And to hear that $500 million in revenue still, and then, you know, you have like the HughesNets and whatnot that are out there. There's just...
That's super surprising.
Yeah, I mean, the United States just isn't ready overall for that. I mean, there's going to be some pockets that are really great. I mean, where I live here, you know, we've got quite a bit of stuff going on. We've got, you know, the University of Notre Dame campus, which has very – I mean, they have great internet access. We've got, you know, quite a few big things like that around here. And, you know, but even me, I have, you know, one of the routing stations – really on the back corner of my property for the for our internet usage, and it's still at times with all the Wi-Fi devices we have hooked up and so on, it eats up so much bandwidth. It's ridiculous.
We all need to move to Kansas City to get Google Fiber. That sounds amazing.
Hey, I'm close enough whatever to do that, so
yeah.
We were trying to actually get that in my when I went to college at Columbia. We were trying to, you know, put up a big big movement to get that there, and I think we were in the final running for it, and we just came up really short.
Oh,
so and it's something I would really like to do that. And I mean, we're getting to that point with it right now that I think even a lot of major cities are trying to make, you know, state like citywide available, like Wi-Fi. You know, where you won't not like in the city, we would be you're traveling, whatever. You get a certain password, or you know, you have to pay a certain password and you're able to log in, whatever. I'm sure it may not be the best, but it's just something kind of be readily available Wi-Fi that you can use, you know, that you can just share. So that's like a little tool, like thing I'd really like to see a lot more.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, like going to big cities like Los Angeles or Chicago, there's Wi-Fi that's available basically in any shop or building that you go in, just because that's kind of the standard there. Seattle especially as well. So I just don't think that we're everywhere. Like here in Albuquerque, that's not the thing. I'm not sure where it is everybody else, but that just needs to start growing, and then from there we can start catching up to the rest of the world, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, well, I mean, Japan has great freaking internet access, and they're apparently getting a super awesome Mario Kart arcade system coming again, too. I mean, it's called Mario Kart Grand Prix DX, and I mean, it's not the first time that we've seen something like this from Nintendo and Namco, but I mean, this is really cool because Namco has been working with Nintendo for Smash Brothers, so I mean, do you think that this could be kind of what is going on with the Wii U? Do you think it's going to be kind of a port of that game?
You know, it looks like... I did a little bit of research on this a little bit earlier, and you know, it looks like it's not the first time that that Namco has worked on a Mario Kart game. They've actually worked on quite a few.
Yeah, I think three of them actually. There are three of them for the arcade, and they've all
right.
And they're pretty cool too. I got the chance to play with one when I went to Disneyland, and they had an arcade cabinet of that there. It's really neat.
And I think that, I mean, this one, it looks like it would be pretty cool too. It's been about 6 years since they worked with Nintendo on one, so I think that you know, there's definitely a market there. I think though, what they'll probably end up doing is possibly the next Mario Kart bring some of the features from that and bring them over. I think a couple cool features I have, and I was going to write it down, but I forget what it was called. But basically, it gave you an option for you and a teammate to kind of combine your carts together into like a bigger one where one person controls, the other person can release the weapons and so on. But it looks like, if I read correctly, there's going to be around 100 plus different like items in the game to use. That's a huge amount of items.
That
I mean,
is.
I don't know how you could ever get bored with that. I mean, I know sometimes green shell, red shell, you know, yay, yeah. I mean, I got this or that, but 100 different items, that's just ridiculous.
Right. Yeah, I mean, do you think that this would be successful in the U.S., like if they came out with this arcade cabinet, or even if they just ported it to like the Wii U console?
I think it would be successful. I don't know how... I don't know if it was an arcade cabinet. You know, I think with the way the arcades have kind of gone here in the United States, probably not as successful. I know that in Japan, they're still hugely popular. But I don't know if it was an arcade, I don't know, but with a port to the Wii U or even maybe a 3DS, but more than likely the Wii U, I think it would be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Mario Kart's always a popular choice regardless of, you know, what it is. I mean, even the older ones are just as popular today as the newer ones are.
It is. And, you know, I like seeing these little collaborations go. I mean, you remember back about during the GameCube era when it was the Triforce cabinets, which, you know, brought out, what was it, a Mario Kart and, well, an arcade exclusive Mario Kart and F-Zero AX, which was, you know, the arcade equivalent to, you know, F-Zero GX, but with just, you know, different tracks and different characters. And I think I remember that you could take your memory card and put it into the arcade cabinet and transfer, like, your custom vehicle.
Oh, that's right.
That.
I forgot that was a thing. That's right.
And it didn't really take off, that whole collaboration. I mean, it was popular in Japan, but here it was like rare that you would actually see that cabinet. Like really rare.
Yeah,
almost
I've only seen a couple of them now that I even think about it. Yeah, that's crazy. That I can't believe that was a thing. I forgot about that.
I'm trying to think of the other game that they did for that besides Mario Kart.
I remember F-Zero, and I think I want to say maybe
it was supposed to be Namco, because it was obviously, what was it, F-Zero was that collaboration with Amusement Vision and Sega, and Namco and Star Fox and Nintendo were with Star Fox.
Right.
I think they wanted to plan that around the same time when Star Fox Assault came out, and that didn't really materialize as well. I mean, I think they just got to the planning stage and they decided to completely scrap it, which is kind of a shame, especially for the Star Fox series, which has a known history of, you know, games being scrapped at the last minute. I mean, Star Fox 2, for instance, for the Super Nintendo, but we all know the reason why that got scrapped was Miyamoto. It was so close to the N64 being released, and he pretty much, he just wanted to clean, like, a slate between Super Nintendo, like, 2D releases and 3D releases of, like, their franchises. And you can still find, like, ROMs of, like, Star Fox 2 online, but
yeah,
it depends on which one you get, because most of them either buggy or one will only come with, like, the multiplayer aspect, like, you know, with the combat, like, aspects of the game, or just the single player. And if you get a chance, look at some videos of Star Fox 2 on YouTube. I mean, it's interesting what could have been, you know, if this game would have been released, because obviously, you know, the original Star Fox is not really considered canon in the series story. I mean, the Star Fox 64 was kind of, people tend to forget, it was technically a reboot of the series.
Right. Yeah, I would like to see Star Fox come back in some form. I mean, I think that it's due. There hasn't been really a Star Fox game since the DS one, the last game that was launched, or was it?
Yeah, the Star Fox Command was the last one. And I mean, if we want to get into a subject of like series that need kind of like a good retooling, it's that one. Not that it's bad, but it's obviously, you know, lost its footing in like the past installments, you know, be it with Adventures and Assault. And I mean, I never played Command, but, you know, from what my couple of I've heard, it was good return to roots, but it didn't really hit that mark that, you know, Star Fox 64 had.
Right.
And I'd really like to see Nintendo kind of, you know, just go back to the drawing board with that series, you know, and just, be it changing the story or, you know, again, going back just to the on-rails component, like, you know, just sticking to on-rails combat.
Right. And, you know, yeah. I mean, with the remake of Star Fox 64 on the DS, I mean, that was a great game. I mean, obviously it was just the original game prettied up a little bit, but I mean, that could work on the DS, you know, on the 3DS, you know, I mean, they could just make those assets from that game that they made and then make another Star Fox, and it would be fantastic.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of opportunity for the series out there. I mean, they could come back and you know stick to the original stories, but send them on a different journey. And you know, I think that it would be a huge seller for Nintendo.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, we are kind of coming to the close of our podcast, but I had a couple of questions that I wanted to ask you guys and get your viewpoint on. I mean, so the first one I had for you was, I mean, how would you change the Wii U? Like, what would you do to change it, like firmware wise, like something software wise, like how, or even hardware, like if you wanted a better gamepad with a better battery, like I think everybody does. But I mean, what are your guys' thoughts on that?
Well, I think that, you know, rather than kind of beating in the stuff we've talked about maybe the last 2, 3, 4 podcasts with like the battery life and so on, I think Harrison kind of mentioned it before, and I think we both maybe feel over the same way about this, is how your Nintendo ID is locked to one console.
Yeah.
You know, one example that I was reading about yesterday, maybe it was Friday, one example I was having is I think it was on Kotaku. I could be wrong, but I think it was on there. And one of the writers was speaking to somebody, and the person.
Oh, I heard this story. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, the person wanted to remain nameless. He didn't want his name out there, but he really wanted just to get the information out. But he had purchased a Wii U, and he you know the Wii U wasn't working correctly. It kept getting the red light. And, you know, I guess it was working sporadically because he was able to finally he decided that he was going to transfer his Wii data over to his Wii U. He had about $400 worth of eShop downloads on his Wii. And when he transferred him to his Wii U, you know, obviously his Wii U wasn't working properly. And instead of contacting Nintendo and getting the warranty replacement through them, basically, he returned it back to the store that he went to and got a new console. So obviously when he went to set up his Nintendo ID,
he couldn't get his games.
He
could,
yeah.
So
what
that's
he did,
terrible.
It was, and he contacted Nintendo, which I think was the right thing to do. And obviously when you log into your Nintendo online account, it shows you every game that you've downloaded and so on.
Right.
And so he had a copy of that, and Nintendo of course told him basically, sorry, there's nothing we can do, but they gave him a $200 credit on his account. The downside is, he got a $200 credit for $400 worth of games. So I know Nintendo has said that in the future it's something that they're working on, and they to basically, you know, allow you to do the swap. I've got to think that it's a pretty easy update, though. I mean, it can't be that hard to fix.
No. I imagine that there's multiple ways of doing it. I mean, it's been done with other things before. Apple's got it down. Sony's got it down. You know, I mean, come on, guys. Get this
exactly. Fixed. Exactly. And so that alone, I mean, that kind of, you know, that it's probably one of the biggest things I'm seeing so far. If mine broke, obviously I'm going to contact Nintendo to get it replaced. But let's say, you know, 1 year and one day from now, after the 1 year manufacturer's warranty is up, mine breaks. What do I do? I mean, if they haven't solved it by then, I've lost everything.
That's right. Yeah. And that's why that's actually one of the reasons why I haven't transferred all my eShop games from my Wii to my Wii U, because of my experience with the Wii U when I first got it. I mean, what if it breaks on me again, you know, then I'm kind of probably going to be out all those games, and that's not a chance I'm willing to take. So until we can get like our games locked to an ID and not just a console, which I think is ridiculous at this point. I don't know if I'm going to transfer them, you know?
It is ridiculous because, I mean, and that is my, you know, one of my biggest problems with the Wii U right now is the fact that, yeah, you have your ID that's just, you know, pretty much tethered to that console. It's just, I just don't really understand Nintendo's reasoning behind the idea of doing that, whatever, and it's something that can be easily changed through a firmware update. I mean, the same way, you know, people were whining about, you know, achievements not being, like, console-wide achievements not being on the system. Again, these are things that can be in place, you know, fixed through, you know, a software update. But given Nintendo's history, I'm not sure when or if they're going to do this. It's, you know, they've been arrogant in the past. They've been arrogant and, well, not arrogant. They've been stubborn in the past, but... And I don't know, it just what history shows me that I'm not sure what they're going to do about this. I mean, as far as other problems, I mean, these other ones are going to be fixed is slow loading times between, you know, Windows, OS, and I mean, rework the home menu and the fact that, like, not having to go through multiple menus or something like that. I feel like there's too many jumping in between. And this won't help whatever, but can you guys please just lay off, you know, deleting my posts when I say something like, say, for instance, like I'm playing Nintendo Land and I say like, oh, this game kicks ass. And it's like, sorry, this comment's been deleted because you used language on this one. Like, seriously, I'm complimenting your game and you're doing this to me. I mean, even it happened to me again this week. I was quoting a line from like one of my favorite parody shows, Dragon Ball Z Abridged. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned I censored the F word on there. And to the point, whatever, it was like, okay, I censored the first four letters on there with bullets. Mm-hmm. And I just said ing at the end, and still they thought that was, you know, inappropriate. And I'm like, wow. Give me a break, please.
Wow.
Yeah, things like – I'm not so sure that Nintendo will ever change that policy on the
Miiverse. Oh, no, no. I can understand the fact that they don't want this Miiverse to be – I mean, it's their own version of social network.
Yeah.
But I think they don't want this to be turned into basically a cesspool that you would see if you dig pretty much deep through Facebook or even Twitter, for instance. I mean, mm-hmm. they're trying to keep this tame. But for little things like that, you know, kind of lay off a little bit. It's just – really annoying. But again, that's just me nitpicking on that whole subject. But then again, Nintendo has had a history of, you know, censoring things, be it, you know, importing games and censoring, you know, be it like cleavage or, you know, right. stuff like that through like you have certain RPGs. But yeah, that's one thing I changed. But I don't know. I mean, what else would you change about it, Eugene?
I mean, one of the things that I would definitely want Nintendo to do. I don't think that they would, because it. I don't know exactly how it would go over with developers, but require every game that comes out on the Wii U to implement some sort of like gamepad support, so then you don't have to play on the TV. You know, off-screen support, I guess it would be called. And I understand that some games like Zombie U would not be possible with that, but I mean, at least strongly urging people like that. That can to do that. It doesn't seem like it would be too hard. It seems like it's part of the system anyway. So that's definitely something I'd like to see in the moving forward.
I could see that happening in the future. I mean, I know with the original launch, maybe that wasn't so hard, but like you said, I don't think it would be that hard to do in the future. I mean, even if it's you know, take away some of the features, maybe if it's just like an action menu or whatnot,
mm-hmm.
maybe like an RPG, make us hit the B button to go into the menu, like we've always had to do in the past. I mean, rather than having it right there on the gamepad,
right?
I think that would be huge.
That would be too. And another thing I wanted to add is I noticed when you have to figure out when this is a small thing that can also be changed with another system update is when you find out when friends are online. Well, when you notice that, whatever, the home menu, you know, blinks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I would really like it if they would do the same way as like you would see with PlayStation 3 or 360. I mean, an icon pops up. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, I mean, Nintendo's philosophy would be like they don't want this to kind of like interrupt like gameplay or whatever, or like, you know, be distracting. But, you know, you can do it in a way, whatever, that's up in the corner or like, you know, wherever on the screen where it's not very, you know, distracting. But that's one thing I'd really like to see implemented on there.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Well, it works too. I mean, I guess in the favor, like, you know who's online then. I mean, if it's, you know, if it's Eugene online and I see him online, cool, I can go play, you know, whatever game he's playing and, you know, play against him. Harrison comes online, I don't really want to talk to him right now, so, no, just...
Yeah.
that's fine, you know, it's like off on this podcast, see ya.
No, but just as an example, maybe there's... you know, certain people that you don't want to, you know, play against. Maybe they just beat you 20 times in a row in a game, and the last thing you want to do is be humiliated again. So you can be that person, Harrison. You just beat me 20 times in a row.
That's right.
But no, I mean, I think that's a great idea, though. I mean, because, you know, at first when on Xbox Live, that really annoyed me, especially if I'm trying to watch, like, a movie or something on the Xbox. I can remember that, you know, having it hooked up to the TV in the living room, we're watching Netflix, and constantly through the movie, we'd get these little pop-ups. And in this case, though, it was like all my daughter's friends. I don't care that they're online and they want to invite her to these games and whatnot.
You can turn, there's the option to turn it off. I know that.
You can.
So
But it
should definitely be something optional. Like, I think I definitely agree with that. I mean, right now there's no way to tell what's going on when that light is flashing. You know, I mean, it could either be a Wii U chat call or it could be someone sending you a game invite. I mean, but you don't know. There definitely needs to be some kind of like pop-up notification.
You know, something else that one of the readers brought up in one of the posts, and I never really realized it, but if there's I guess it's on the eShop, if there's like a game that's considered to be like adult content, whatever, you know, Nintendo deems to be, mm-hmm. He had mentioned that you're not able to access it until 11 o'clock at night.
Right. I heard about that, yeah.
Yeah. And like in his case, you know, he input his credit card information, it's on his Nintendo ID. I mean, obviously he's proven that he's of age to have this,
right.
This content. You know, why not have that content, you know, available all the time? And there might be a way, and I haven't tested it myself, but I know I've seen in the past on other types of, like, the internet and so on, where you can actually change the time on the computer. I'm sure you can change the time on your Wii U to mimic that it's 11 o'clock and, you know, maybe that will help. I haven't gone in too much to see if you can do that yet, but I mean, that's an extra step that shouldn't be necessary if it even is possible. So there's still some work to do, but I mean, I guess we'll never really be completely happy with it. There's always going to be something we'll want changed.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
And I think that's a European problem, I believe, when the listener mentioned on there, which, yeah, I mean, the same thing when you could say about, like, you know, Australian game rules when it comes to the violence. I mean, Europe has, like, a very, like, well, Nintendo of Europe has, like, a same thing with NOA and Nintendo Japan. They have just different ways of, like, you know, how they, like, how they control their console, like, you know, their console network.
Yeah, well, and you know, yep. What I heard was that the whole reason for it is because of Germany, their online rules, or their gaming rules, and I guess for some reason you can't do any content past that time or something like that, or download any content past that time, so the whole entire Nintendo of Europe has to follow by what Germany is doing, so it's kind of interesting that that's how it goes down.
I think that's exactly right. I believe they're based in Germany and in Europe, correct?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so then they have to follow by those laws, and so the entire European Union has to do the same thing.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's kind of interesting, but I'm glad that we don't have to abide by that. It's not like I've downloaded many games on the Wii Shop that have been rated M. It's just
right.
That if I wanted to, I wouldn't want to wait until somebody tells me that I can, because it's past a certain time, you know?
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. So with the Zelda games, then, I mean, how would you change that franchise? Do you guys have any ideas of how you would change it for the better?
I would obviously, well, talked this like in great detail before, you know, when even the last Nintendo Direct, when the new Zelda, well, when Wind Waker HD and the announcement that a new Zelda would be, you know, in the pipeline, and how they're going to be, you know, experimenting with different, like, you know, art styles.
Mm-hmm.
Probably my main thing I would like to change is, well, two things. One, I felt like the previous Zelda editions have been, on the term of the difficulty curve, have been relatively easy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I even remember during, like, Wind Waker, as great as a game that I loved that much, I felt I could recall only dying about maybe two or three times during that entire, like, you know, playthrough. It'd be nice to, you know, up that difficulty, make the journey, you know, but not to the point, you know, like many games, I mean, the best way to put in difficulty, like, you know, to have a very good difficulty is, yes, it's challenging, but it doesn't punish the player. I mean, a perfect example of this would have to be Donkey Kong Country Returns, for instance. For a game that, like, you know, that was at times very difficult, but, you know, like I said, it doesn't punish you to the point whatever, you know, you're starting over, like, level over level, but you're given enough lives to kind of actually, you know, lives to go through this as basic, like, on trial and error.
Right.
Now, and another thing I'd like to change is, well, I would really, really, I mean, Zelda stories have been, I mean, as far out of, like, Nintendo's, like, you know, catalog, as far as story-based, you know, it's up there near the top. I mean, I could probably even put Metroid on there, but I'd really like to find a heavier emphasis on story. And what I mean by that, I believe voice acting is a definite must for the next edition of this series. Now, again, I'm for the camp, whatever, of not giving Link a voice. I feel like, you know, having a silent protagonist has helped in the, like, you know, has worked in the past. I mean, look at Gordon Freeman, the character Gordon Freeman in Half-Life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a silent protagonist, whatever, that even some people can relate to and, you know, sympathize with and, you know, idolize. And it's, you know, you still get to know the character a little bit more through the other characters without the main character speaking.
Right, yeah, I definitely think that Nintendo needs to give the series some voice acting. I mean, not that it's terrible reading through everything. I mean, it's usually a pretty funny, witty banter that they have going on, but it's just not the same. This is a next-gen game. It's got to have voice acting, I think, in my opinion.
I agree, and I even if they give Link a voice, sorry. Even if they give him a voice, I think that they do have to be very careful with it. You know, it's got to be something that they do, I guess, a lot of research on to make sure that it's really his voice. You know, they can't just throw any random character in there.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, you know, There's a lot of good voice actors out there, but
they can even leave Link mute, but have the characters talk at him. You know,
I think that'd be great. I mean, like for Ganon.
They can have creative ways to do it, whatever. And I kind of saw that a little bit in Skyward Sword, for instance, whatever. When even the characters asked them to tell them a story or what happened, whatever, you would hear him, you know, doing through pantomime, whatever, you know, just saying is like, well, not saying, but, you know, telling the character what he is, but you won't hear the voice and it kind of goes to black and then it goes to the end, whatever,
right,
when he's finished the story. I thought that was kind of okay. It was kind of a clever nod to say, like, oh yeah, this Zelda series, a series that has no voice acting and Link doesn't talk.
Right.
I think for Ganon, I'd like to see Richard Epcar give it a try.
That'd be awesome.
You know, he's a great voice actor, and he's actually very active, like, on Facebook too. You know, there's a couple pages I'm fans of and whatnot there. And, you know, I see him pop in every so often and just say, hey, you know, how you guys doing? Or, hey, keep an eye out, I'm working on a big project or whatnot. And, you know, I think that would also bring some extra notice to the series, too. And not to mention that his role of the Joker is pretty awesome, too. But, you know, with the Zelda franchise, I would only really say two changes that I would make. I mean, one, solidify the timeline. I think it's great how they explained why, you know, the three different timelines and, you know, why sometimes you're a kid, sometimes you're an adult, and, you know, whatever. I think that's great that they did that, but they need to do something to bring those three timelines back in order and stick to more of a linear timeline in the future. It was, you know, just to really, you know, expand the story. I mean, it's great that they went three different routes, but If we're going to have this huge, massive game that they tell us we're going to have, I think that we need to, you know, continue to keep it along that path. And it can stray from that path a little bit and keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. But, you know, I just think they just need to do something with that timeline there. The other thing I would like to see, it's not essential, but one thing I would like to see is in the boss battles, like the major boss battles, make them more active time or turn-based. You know, to really allow you to immerse yourself in the battle, and it's not just like a hack and slash, but more of a, you know, really take your time and strategize how you're going to defeat that boss.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that might just be my love for RPGs out there, but I think that would be something great. You know, if I'm facing, you know, Ganon or whoever at the end, you know, instead of doing a quick, you know, 5, 10, 15 minute fight, I mean, being able to drag that out maybe even longer by, you know, maybe taking me down to the bare essentials and have all my magic or potions or whatever and be able to use, like, my original sword to make it as tough as I want to fight him.
Right.
Or, you know, use my most powerful weapon and you know, maybe not use any magic or whatnot.
Yeah, I think that what both of you guys are hitting on is that the series has become a little bit too easy as of late. So I definitely like to see Nintendo give maybe not difficulty settings per se, but, like, some kind of way that we can make the game as difficult as we want it to be. Like, maybe not have the guided character, like Fee or Navi, tell you every little hint. And, you know, kind of, like, if you want a hint, then sure, maybe I'll push the Z button or something like that and then get it. But if not, then she just, like, leaves me alone, you know?
And I'd be completely good not having any hints from her at all. You know, if I'm interacting with the NPCs, you know, maybe they're going to be the ones giving me the hint, and it's up to me to find that one, you know, townsperson or one person lost in the woods or whatnot, that points me in the right direction. But, you know, and I would be okay with them having maybe, you know, a couple modes. Maybe the easy mode has mm-hmm. Navi flying along with you, or in the hard mode, you know, she's just not there. That would be okay with me also.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Nintendo has said that they were wanting to change the Zelda franchise up a little bit, and they've kind of said that with every game that's come out in the Zelda
right.
franchise, I want to say, but hopefully this time they do change it for the better and get some of these ideas that, you know, have been floating around that are kind of common knowledge to Zelda fans, you know, like hopefully they're listening to us a little bit. So, I mean, with E3 right around the corner, then, I mean, what are your predictions for Nintendo? I mean, what are your ideal E3? What's your ideal E3 showing from Nintendo as well?
Well, predictions, you know, I think that those are going to be the basics, like more upgrades and fixes to the Wii U and 3DS possibly. Probably a longer battery life on the gamepad, mm-hmm. Possibly a headphone jack on the Pro. We're probably going to see some new game reviews, you know, and they've already told us we will see some game reviews. So hopefully we see a little bit more than what they tell us. You know, one thing that I can predict is possibly having, and maybe we won't know this, but possibly having two presentations at the ready, depending upon where they land in the presentations. If they're third in line like they were last year, I could see them having kind of a dummy down presentation. Not to mean that, you know, it's going to be dull and boring, but, you know, if Microsoft and Sony don't reveal a lot like at E3, you know, maybe it's they're right on par with where they were last year. I can see Nintendo kind of holding back a little. However, if Microsoft and Sony come out full force, I can see, you know, that's where Nintendo pulls out the big guns and maybe shows us some preview of this new massive Zelda that they have out there. But if Microsoft and Sony don't really up the par, maybe they just cut that out altogether because of the you know, they can save that for later when we find out more about the other consoles. But some of the wants that I would like, you know, I would like to see the gamepad become Wi-Fi enabled. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously that itself, you know, I'm not going to carry that around everywhere I go. But, you know, just if I have it in a bag or whatnot and I'm out and about, maybe be able to access my eShop games via Wi-Fi on there would be pretty cool.
Yeah, that would be neat.
Just for the gaming on the go. The dual gamepad play. I don't know if they're going to actually present that, but I that's something I'd want, maybe even utilizing the 3DS as a second gamepad for those people that, you know, can't fork out the money but have the 3DS already. That would be a pretty cool function. And I asked around a bit to some people that read our articles and stuff, and some of the feedback I got that they'd like to see is one guy I spoke to, Eric. He wants to see a 3D Pokemon and use the Wiimote as a way of catching the Pokemon, kind of like you're throwing the Pokeball at the Pokemon.
Yeah, that would be neat.
You know, one of our readers, Katie, she wants to see a Heavenly Sword game come out. Another reader, Daniel, wants to see the new Super Smash Brothers and Zelda, which I think that we might see, you know, a little bit more of Wind Waker and maybe some Smash Brothers there. And then another reader, Cody, he wants to see Star Wars Battlefront 3. I don't know if we'll get that for the Wii U, yeah. But I think we might see that.
You know, closed down, I doubt we'll get that.
I don't think so either. But, you know, it'd be nice if some of these other developers picked up some of these series that were great series and whatnot. But again, yeah, you're right. We probably won't see that one.
Right.
For me, though, I'll keep this short. I mean, what do I want to see? I've said this repeatedly, I want to see Retro Studios' new game. Mm-hmm. And I've said for the past 2 years that I've been wanting to see what their next project up there, and whatever this could be, whatever, I feel like it could steal the show. I mean, if this is like an original IP, then that, you know, more power to them. But I mean, if it's up from established, like they're telling like an established franchise that, you know, you know, handing them over, you know, there you go as well. I mean, I would really like to see that as well. But as far as I would really like to see, I mean, this has become another habit of Nintendo, is like they like to kind of brag about their sales numbers. I mean, we've seen this in past E3s. Yeah. But I would really like to see more and more emphasis on the games. I mean, one thing I just don't like about presentations, and this is all three major console makers are at fault of this, is I really don't like the idea of seeing someone on stage, you know, during a conference, play a game. I understand the idea of like trying to show off everything, like to show off how it works and everything, but I feel like that's, you know, I feel like they put too much of a heavy emphasis on that, and it takes up so much time. I mean, you're usually getting some games that don't work on stage, say, for instance, like the first time when Skyward Sword was shown, or last year in Sony's show, what was it, Storybook or whatever, that
Wonderbook.
That just did not work on stage as well, and I just don't like that concept. I just don't like the idea of seeing somebody play on stage and, you know, basically taking up valuable time where it could be probably to show more stuff. I mean, right. I really like just seeing trailers and then seeing the impressions on the show floor.
Right. Yeah, I think that definitely you're right about that. I mean, we need to see more game trailers and less old executives trying to show us why their game is cool, you know? Just show us the game. Yeah, but what I really want for this year's E3, I mean, one of the things is that I want to see the Mario Kart kind of go into a different direction. Like, I know we already know that Mario Kart is going to be coming out, but now they have to utilize the Wii U gamepad to its fullest potential to, you know, kind of show people what the Wii U is all about. I think that's going to be very important this year. I mean, one thought that I had, and I doubt that this is what Nintendo is going, but you can have maybe like a double dash type of situation where one person is using the gamepad and one person is controlling the cart, and then the gamepad, they move in space to shoot items at enemies, or, you know, something like that. I there's lots of different things that Nintendo could do, but they really need to do something that shows why the gamepad is necessary.
It is, and yeah. Mario Kart series, along with, even to an extent, like, the Zelda franchise and what we've asked, like, you know, what could fix it or to improve it, is, you know, Mario Kart has become a bit kind of really formulaic. There hasn't been too much change into the overall, like, you know, gameplay structure. I mean, this is another series I feel like, you know, now is the time to kind of, like, shake things up. I mean, one of the biggest, you know, criticisms of Nintendo is that they, you know, rely heavily too much on their past franchises that they've been putting out for the last 20 to 30 years. But, I mean, can you blame them for that? I mean, a lot of game companies could kill to have a franchise, you know, stay that long. But again, like any other like series out there, I mean, these series have to evolve. So that's one thing I'd really like to kind of just see a little bit more from, you know, change things up a bit, you know. It's not necessarily items or new characters, just to make it something to make it look fresh.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's going to look good in HD, I'm sure, and maybe that will be enough for gamers. But I would really, I don't know. I just don't know. I can't think of any ideas right now. But I mean, I would like Nintendo to like blow my mind with what they can do with the gamepad, you know.
Yeah,
it
absolutely.
Is. And I feel like that's one thing they need to focus a little bit more on is, like, you know, early on we still haven't seen, you know, we need to see more and more features that this gamepad, you know, what the use of the touchscreen can be done with these games. I mean, we already look at the 3DS right now. I mean, the whole 3D aspect right now has been kind of been, you know, dumbed down in marketing right now. I mean, it just right now we're rarely getting those games that really take effect of that feature.
Right.
And a game, for instance, I really hope that actually does a little bit better, whatever that 3D feature is, Luigi's Mansion's Dark Moon. I really feel like a lot of those images can, with the 3D on, could really, you know, enhance the experience.
Yeah, definitely. Right. That game, I love the original Luigi's Mansion, so this is one of the games that I can't wait for. It's going to be hopefully a good one.
One thing I'd like to see with the Mario Kart series, kind of take an example from the Kingdom Hearts series with the gummy ships. You know, with that, as you're playing the gummy ship portion of the game, you collect the gummy pieces and you can actually customize your ship to what you like it to be. You can put as many weapons on there, and you can make some really massive vehicles there. I'd love to see something like that implemented, where even if it's you know, whatever mode you're playing, you can collect these pieces and just to see what people out there will make for their characters.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. Actually, kind of like a Little Big Planet-esque type of Mario Kart thing. You know, I mean, I think they tried that with Little Big Planet karting, but it didn't kind of go over so well. I think that Nintendo would definitely have the ability to do that, just because it's Mario. You know, it's a franchise that works.
And you know, that'd be actually a good feature. I mean, when you have something that's you have play something on the gamepad while you're waiting for something on there, like on the screen. I mean, that could be something as well that, you know, brings out a lot of what this screen, what the touchscreen is, you know, built for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. That's right. So speaking of like the 3DS, Harrison, you said you were going to get one. So is that what you have been playing lately? Or did you have you not picked one up yet?
No. Sorry, everybody. I'm waiting to make the jump right now. I'm surprised actually a couple of stores still have like the the 3DS XL Mario Kart, you know, bundle for $200 and there's only one or two at my local Walmart right now, and I just been kind of anytime when I go there, like just to kind of window shop. I see it there, and I'm just thinking like, is today the day? Is today the day? And you know, I'm thinking like, I need to kind of get on that one right now. Just I know I'm being slow on this one. It just probably. I mean, I said Fire Emblem Awakening gets released, I would get that as well. So. It's just a matter of time right now. I'm just waiting for the right moment to win to plop down the cash for it. But what I've been playing is, I mean, I haven't been really playing too much on my Wii U exactly. I mean, but like one of the things I like doing is just kind of messing around with the Miiverse a lot, whatever. Just like looking at the different like sketches and just doing posts and trying to get like, you know, not start up a conversation, but just, you know, just start a little discussion and stuff like that, you know, be it like, oh, is everybody excited for so-and-so game or whatever, to see all the different people I could probably meet and, you know, just engage with. But yeah, I mean, as far as games, I did download Balloon Fight on my my Wii U right now, and I've been kind of...
To Scott's chagrin.
I'm twitching right now.
Yeah.
why you don't like Balloon Fight?
Yeah.
No. No. Re-listen to last week's podcast.
Yeah, he was.
I was saying I forget. I was like, oh yeah, I forget. Oh yeah, that is right. You did not do that. I mean, this is why we need to have this more weekly, so I can actually remember these things. But points away from me. But I've been playing. I've been going back on Nintendo Land and just playing a little bit more of the interactions and trying to get more of the little. Decorations for the park to get on there. I mean, and I mentioned on the Miiverse that I felt like the little thing, little set pieces that you get from the coin, like from the little coin game, which is basically Nintendo Land's version of the trophy lot from Super Smash Brothers.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of those kind of they lack the wow factor or the nostalgia, like way more nostalgia probably from those trophies. Not to say, yeah, a lot of those items are all Nintendo based, and yes, a lot of them are animated.
Yeah.
And one person called me out on that, saying like, "Well, you're saying that you don't like an animated Ridley or Kraid head, whatever." And he mentioned my argument was invalid. I was like, "Okay, thank you for that. I now feel bad about that." But no, I just love the trophies in Smash Brothers because it felt like it was a virtual Nintendo museum. I mean, it gave you this history of all these things, and
yeah.
But it's that's one little distraction I have on there. And then the game I've been playing the most is, of course, been Pikmin Adventure because. Just something that kind of tied me over until Pikmin 3 gets out there. But that's what I'm getting there. Been finally been able to play Borderlands 2. Been kind of knee deep in that right now. I haven't tried out co-op a little bit, but a series like that kind of reinforces my love for loot. I mean, yeah. I loved it in Diablo 2, and I loved it obviously in the first Borderlands. And one thing I just still love about the team at Gearbox is their writing and humor for this game is just above the rest. I just love it.
Definitely.
But I'm barely into that right now. I mean, and yes, barely into it. And there was a line or two that made me, you know, laugh really hard. So, more is hopefully to come in that one.
Oh yeah, you're gonna love it. It's great all the way up until the end. I kind of miss playing that game. It was like my nightly thing to get online with a couple of buddies and play it. But maybe I'll have to do that again. What have you been playing then, Scott? Have you been playing anything interesting?
Balloon Fight.
No balloon fight.
Balloon fight.
I haven't gotten that that upset or crazy recently, but you know, I've been so completely busy, you know, with work and so on. It's amazing I've had time to play anything at all. But I've actually been for a while now, actually since probably mid last year, I've been trying to replay the Final Fantasy series from number one through in numerical order. So I finished 4 not too long ago. So I literally just started Final Fantasy IV: The After Years on the DS. I'm playing it on my 3DS, but you know, it's really all I've really been playing. I mean, I started it probably on, I think it was Thursday night late, and I basically got to the portion where the first save. Actually, I did get into a cave and fought a Minotaur and got just destroyed. So I kind of just put it down, and then earlier today I picked it up again and you know, actually took my time, did some leveling up and so on, and I finished that whole cave, got back to the town, talked to some people and saved, and that's about as far as I've gotten. So not a whole lot lately. You know, other than that, you know, just some iOS games here and there, but little in betweens that whenever I just need a quick break, just you know, playing one of those and for about 5 minutes and moving on.
And then moving on to something else. Yeah, that's right. Little quick fire games. Well, I've been playing. I've had a little bit more time to play games lately, so I picked up Ni No Kuni for the PS3, and my gosh, that game is so beautiful. It's great. It's a great RPG if you're into the JRPG thing, but it's definitely going to take a long time to finish. It's like a, you know, standard 40-50 hour RPG, so I'm glad to dig deep into that one. And then if that's not long enough, I'm also playing Fire Emblem on the 3DS, so there you go. Two long games. Oh, and I actually did pick up a UDraw tablet from Walmart because it was on sale for like $10. Wow. So
those things still exist?
Yeah. My local Walmart had like a stack of 50 of them, so they were just sure just trying to offload them. But yeah, it's terrible. So, yeah.
I say, are you sure that's not a premonition for basically the Wii U in about a year or two, whatever? I hope not. It's like
No, there's no comparison between the two.
No, the UDraw tablet is terrible beyond belief. I guess maybe if you're a kid and you can get a little bit of fun out of it, but I picked up the Kung Fu Panda 2 game and the SpongeBob Squiggly Pants, which actually isn't too bad. That one is WayForward actually made that game, so it's got some redeeming light, but yeah, it's still bad.
Yeah, I forget how old my youngest was when we got that a couple years ago. So I'm guessing she was probably about 8 or 9 at that point. And yeah, I mean, after about the first half hour, it hasn't been played since.
I just picked it up just because, but it's definite. I can definitely see how THQ went bankrupt because of something like this. You know.
Yeah.
Sorry, THQ. Too soon.
I don't think so. Not when you're talking about the gamepad.
Yeah. Well, good stuff. Well, I mean, I think that about does it for the podcast for the week. I mean, anything you guys want to add before we close off the show?
I think that's good on my side.
Yeah, I'll say that. We could not introduce, but we can give a friendly reminder to everybody that we are on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. That's right. We are. I'm at @Infendo_Eugene, and Scott is Essel Pratt. And Harrison is H. Milfeld, but you're going to have to spell that one, I think.
I'll say, yeah, mine is Twitter is H-M-I-L-F-E-L-D. And, yeah, you can find us all on there. I'll say, luckily, though, that Eugene's been on there a little bit more. I know that he's been busy with school. You've been busy with school a lot, whatever. So, finally graduated
today because Everton lost to Manchester United, and I would have said some angry things, I think.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about my team. Well, my team won yesterday. My EPL team, Chelsea, won yesterday. So, luckily, they stopped the bleeding on that one. But yeah, that's yeah. Infendo Radio. We talk about games, and at the end, we talk about EPL.
Yeah, there you go. And hockey sometimes, too, if you're lucky. So, hey, guys, thanks for another good week. I mean, hopefully we'll be back in the next week or two for another good episode. So, for Eugene, for Scott, and for Harrison, have a good weekend. See y'all.
See y'all later. See ya.